So Ephesians chapter 6 and verses 5 to 9. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear, and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them, not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving the Lord, not people, because you know that the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. Well, through the days of this week, it's going to be very warm, very hot, might break some records, at least for the month of June. And maybe you'll get up in the morning and you'll think, why do I need to go to work? Why do I need to go to school? Why do I need to study? What is going to motivate you? What is going to help us to do the jobs that we have to do? And maybe it's hunger that drives you. The thought that, well, if you don't work, you can't have enough to live on. And that's a reasonable motive. Talks about that in the book of Proverbs. Hunger drives the person to work. But I hope that we'll see that there's something higher and greater that motivates us for our daily work. Though the context is of masters and slaves, I think we can see some application to us in this passage. I do need to think a little bit about masters and slaves. We obviously don't agree with slavery. And as we come to this third household relationship, we need to ask ourselves a few questions before we can look at the details. We started with wives and husbands, then last week, children and fathers. Well, 2 weeks ago, the children, last week, fathers. Should really have had that today, being Father's Day, but there we go. And today we come to the third group, slaves and masters. And all three of these groups come under the same principle of chapter 5, verse 21. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. All three reflect something of the relationship of God to his people. Wives are to submit to their husbands as the church submits to Christ. He is the pattern. Children are to obey their parents as to their heavenly Father. Obey your parents in the Lord. And now as we come to slaves and masters, slaves are to obey as to their master in heaven. But there's an important difference between the master-slave relationship and the other two that we've been looking at in the Christian household. Marriage and parenthood were both set up by God from the beginning. We call them creation ordinances. A creation ordinance is something that was there at the beginning, set up by God, something for all people for all time. Marriage and parenthood were there from the beginning. And in fact, Paul quotes, as we saw at the end of chapter 5, he quotes from Genesis 2 and verse 24 about marriage and parenthood. Both of them were given by God, designed by God. But there is no Old Testament quote when he looks at slaves and masters. This was not a creation ordinance. This is something that was set up by mankind, not by God. Where a person is owned and controlled by another, this is not something that God designed. Rather, in a fallen world, this is something that has happened, but not by God's design. Now, under the law of Moses, slavery within Israel was very carefully regulated. And when we were going through Exodus, if you want to look back, I don't know if it's on the website still, but the sermon from Exodus 21, we looked quite a bit at the place of slavery in the Old Covenant. In a fallen world, it was a way for someone to be able to work, to survive, who would otherwise be completely destitute. And in the New Testament, it's a little different, but there's a similar principle. It wasn't that the Bible immediately condemned all slavery and tried to abolish it straight away. Nonetheless, Christian masters and Christian slaves were to behave better. There was to be something distinctly different to the way in which they behaved. Now, it is worth noting, just for the record, that the enslaving of people, the kidnapping of people, making them slaves, that is always forbidden in the scriptures. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 10 lists those who are involved in the slave trade as being those who are lawbreakers. The scriptures also encourage slaves to get their freedom if they can. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 21. And the fact is, Christianity helped to end slavery in the Roman world. Now, historians, of course, will each come with their different angle on this, and I'm not a great historian. You can read about how slavery came to an end in the Roman world if you wish to, but Christianity undoubtedly had at least a part to play in the ending of slavery. You might think, well, why doesn't Paul tell the masters immediately to free all their slaves and all the slaves to try and escape from their masters? Well, actually, that would be to promote revolution. And there were uprisings. You've heard of Spartacus. This was 100 years or so before Paul is writing. And what happens? You have huge amount of bloodshed, you have fear, you have disorder, and that is not something that Christianity would want to promote. The way the gospel changes society is much more gradual and much more long-term. So, for example, when Philemon, who was a Christian, Paul wrote to him because his slave Onesimus had escaped, and under Paul's witness, Onesimus had become a Christian, and now Paul sends Onesimus back. But he says to Philemon, receive him not as a slave, but as a dear brother. That was revolutionary. It wasn't going to promote any bloodshed. This was the way of love, and this would begin that quiet revolution that would end slavery. So the Bible is against slavery, but nonetheless, it also deals with the fallen world as it is. There's a realism about the way scriptures help us to live in this world. One day, everything will be made new. One day, there will be no more injustice, no more inequality. One day, all will worship Christ as their true head. But we need to know how to live here and now. None of us lives in ideal circumstances. Actually, compared to most of the world, our lives are relatively comfortable. But even so, our daily work, there is pressure, there is stress. We are still in a fallen world. And some of the principles that we see here in Ephesians chapter 6 really can help us, even though, thank God, we're not slaves. And so I want us to look at these verses under two sections. Firstly, considering the slaves and what they were to do, and then masters and what they were to do. So my first heading is this. Do your daily work wholeheartedly for the Lord. Do your daily work wholeheartedly for the Lord. A Christian slave in the Roman world might easily have got up on a Monday morning or Tuesday morning or any morning of the week, because I imagine every day was probably much the same. And here are a few possible thoughts that they might have had. Well, I'm a child of God now. I don't need to serve my pagan master anymore. Or I'm just going to do the minimum work I have to so that I can have more time with other Christians. Or I'm not going to work hard. My master will only use the profit that I make him for immoral purposes. And so we could go on. Many reasons that Christian slave could mount up for not working hard. And when you read verses 5 to 8, it cuts right across any and every objection. All those thoughts are put to rest. It simply says, slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear. It tells them to work hard, to work wholeheartedly. They're to respect their earthly masters. They're to fear their earthly masters. And this isn't simply to avoid punishment. the Christian slave now has this new motive for doing their work. In serving their earthly masters, they are serving Christ, their heavenly master. And that is a radical change. They are serving Christ. Now, maybe you're familiar with this truth, but it's worth pausing for us to feel its importance. I hope you are familiar with that, that in all that we do, we're doing it as to the Lord. And when people grasp that, it transforms the way they work. It completely changes their daily living. So let's spend a little bit of time just going through these verses. Firstly, I just want you to see how clearly and how repeatedly this point is made in verses 5 to 8. I'm just going to read the verses again, emphasizing how the work that the slave does is for Christ. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them, not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Verse 7, serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving Christ, not people, because you know that the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. We have a very similar passage in Colossians chapter 3. In fact, it's one of our memory verses. Colossians 3, verse 23. Whatever you do, do it all for the Lord. There's no mistake here. There's no misunderstanding. In doing their work, though serving pagan masters, they were serving Christ. That changes their outlook on their work completely. Suddenly it gives a dignity to their work that they didn't have before. It gives a meaning to their work and a value way beyond what they had ever imagined. Now, if you had a good master in the Roman world, you might feel some satisfaction in your work. Maybe you were working in the fields, and the satisfaction of having planted that crop or harvested that crop. Or if you worked in the home, maybe the satisfaction of making that meal that people appreciated. But typically, you'd be mistreated. You'd be taken for granted. There'd be little thought for your feelings. You were just seen as property. You were just seen as incidental. So often, you'd be ignored. And the slightest mistake, you get a beating. And so you are unmotivated. Maybe you are motivated only by fear, the fear of a beating. But now for the Christian slave, it's completely different. Because as they work in that field, as they prepare that meal, as they clean that house, they are doing it as if for Christ. They're serving him. And he doesn't mistreat. He doesn't beat people. He doesn't take people for granted. In fact, he was the one who took the beating for them. He died on the cross for them. And the fact that Jesus Christ died for that slave gives that slave a wonderful sense of peace, of being loved, of dignity. And now he or she is able to see that all that they are doing is for their Lord and Master, Jesus. As they serve their earthly master, they are serving him. And so they could imagine, if Jesus was the one coming to be a guest at that home, well, how gladly they would have served Jesus. And the scriptures now tell them, well, that's what you are doing. Though Jesus is not there in the flesh, yet as you serve your earthly masters, as you serve his guests, you are serving Christ. Have the same attitude to those guests to those earthly masters that you would as if you were serving Christ. Obey them, not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart, serve wholeheartedly, as if you were serving the Lord, not people. And there's one further motive that is given here in verse 8. They would be rewarded by Christ. Not only does Christ see what they're doing, not only does he know what they're doing, when no one else is looking, he sees it matters to him how they serve, but he will reward them. Verse 8. Because you know that the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. Here then are the motives for the Christian slave. Here's what gives dignity to their work, though others despise them and take them for granted and abuse them. Not so with Christ. He sees, and their work matters to him. Now, how are we to apply these things to us today? The first thing I want to say is that the master-slave relationship is quite different from that of the employer-employee. Let's not think that we are in any sense like these slaves or these masters. Perhaps the closest in our society is that of the soldier or airman and the commanding officer. In the armed services and in the police force, you have to obey orders. There's no time for negotiation. Lives depend on it. You simply have to obey the orders of your commanding officer. Now, negotiation and finding agreeable ways forward, that's very good in business. That's very good in institutions. But that's not always going to be the possibility in the army, particularly in situations of war. Nonetheless, Paul does, in fact, apply some of what he says to these slaves to other people as well. Did you notice at the end of verse 8? Because you know that the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. So he applies this principle that Christ will reward because what we're doing is serving Christ. He applies that to all of us, whether you're slave or free. And so I think we can see principles here that apply to everyone, every Christian, in their place of work. Whatever your work, Christ will reward you for doing good. And so in your place of work, you're not a slave. Christ notices. And the work that you are doing, it's not primarily for your employer, nor even primarily to enable you to make a living. It is for Christ. And that gives dignity to your work. Those times when no one else sees what you're doing, he sees. His eye is upon you. And every moment is an opportunity to please him, to glorify him in the way in which you do your work. So you show honesty and integrity at work. Not just when people are noticing, but all the time. You put in the hours, even when other people don't realize, even when others are getting away with lazy behavior, you put in the hours, you do what's expected of you, and that will be rewarded by God. Your employer may not notice, though ultimately, of course, they will. But God notices, he sees. Notice how these slaves were to work with a good attitude. How difficult that must have been. Especially if they had a bad master who treated them unfairly, who abused them. How difficult it must have been to work with a good attitude. And yet they're told, serve wholeheartedly, verse 7, as if you were serving the Lord. Well, if slaves were to do that in their unjust situation, how much more should we serve wholeheartedly and with a good attitude as if serving the Lord? He notices, and he is pleased when you work well. That's a motive to get up on a Monday morning. And on Wednesday, when it's going to be particularly hot, Try and remember this, that you go to your place of work to serve the Lord. Whatever your work is, it does not matter if that work is highly valued by our society or if it's even undermined. If you are working, God sees, he notices, it matters to him. You know, the place that you work should be better for having you on its payroll. Because if you're a Christian and you have this godly motive of serving, that will improve the company, the business, the institution where you are working. Your positive mindset encourages other employees. And maybe you've noticed this, the impact that just one person can have on their colleagues. Not because they're telling people off, that doesn't help, but simply their example of integrity, of diligence, of cheerfulness. Instead of moaning in your coffee break, you're positive. Instead of trying to get away with as little amount of work as possible, you're enthusiastic. Your diligence encourages others. It increases the productivity. As a consultant I know in the NHS, huge pressures on people working in the NHS. Sadly, a lot of mismanagement. And the temptation for consultants is just to spend as much time as possible in private medical care. You get more money and you get less hassle. But as a Christian, he doesn't go after all the private care he can. He wants to serve. He wants to help people. His Christianity makes all the difference to his working life. And most of all then, let's see our daily work, whether it's paid work or not, whether it's in the home or in a place of work, whether it's our study, whether it's volunteering. Let us see it as for Christ. Again and again, that comes in these verses. This is what transformed the economy of countries that embraced the revolution, the Reformation. I'm sure you've heard me talking before about the Protestant work ethic. This is what really transformed and made countries in Europe and later more Christianized countries across the world still to be wealthier countries than other countries. Now, again, historians and economists will have many, many reasons and so on, so I don't want to make blanket statements that are unfounded. But the fact is, the Protestant work ethic, where people saw that what they were doing each day was for God. Before the Reformation, the only thing that you could do for God was pray, was give to the church, was go on pilgrimage. Anything else you did was not serving God. It was passages like this from Ephesians 6 that help people to see that, no, actually all that you do is serving God. All that you do is part of your worship. Now, it's not public worship, it's not singing the praise of God, but it's in worship of God, and that transforms it. This is the reason you get up on a Monday morning. And Jesus understood what daily work was like. Remember, he was a carpenter. Until the age of 30, he had clients who were difficult, clients who sometimes didn't pay on time, clients who were fussy. He understood what hard work was about. And so as you serve him, he understands. And not only that, you represent him. Because as a Christian, you are there representing your God. You are ambassadors for Christ. Most people that you meet at work will not be Christians. And how you work, your attitude in the workplace, your attitude to your studies, if you're a student, commends your Savior. Not many people are reading the Bible, but people cannot help but see your life, and especially your working life. So that's our first thing. Do your daily work, wholeheartedly for the Lord. Second, and more briefly, treat others fairly. This is verse 9. Masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. The last household member to be addressed were the masters. And I don't know if it's significant, but, you know, they're not put first. They're given last place. They're not all important. Because the whole point of these verses, from chapter 5, verse 21, here to verse 9 of chapter 6, is that Christ is all important. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Our human status is turned upside down by Jesus Christ. He is the King. He is the true master. He is the true husband. He is the true father. He is the one who is greatest. He is all important. And so this section ends speaking about our master in heaven, with whom there is no favoritism. Three instructions given to these Christian masters. Firstly, treat your slaves as you would want to be treated. Masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Slaves were to serve their masters as if serving the Lord. Well, masters, they were to treat their servants, their slaves, in the same way. They were to give dignity to their slaves. Now, this wasn't to negate the difference in roles that they had. No more than the difference in roles between husband and wife, parent and child, is negated by Christianity. It is simply made better. It's about attitude. It's about respect. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. How can a master submit to his slave? Well, it doesn't mean he stops telling the slave what to do. It doesn't reverse the roles. But in the way in which he leads and gives instruction to his slave, the way in which he speaks, the attitude that he has to that slave is transformed. It's one of treating that person as someone in the image of God and with dignity. You know, so often in our world, the rich and powerful treat others as inferior. They may not think that they do, but I'm sure you've noticed it. The rich and powerful have this strong temptation, often without realizing, of seeing themselves as superior. Now, let me challenge you. None of us are masters. But are there any people, any groups of people, that you are tempted to treat badly or as inferior? What does the scripture say? Masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Treat them as you wanted to be treated. Secondly, stop threatening your slaves. Do not threaten them, beginning of verse 9 there. Remember what we talked about last week about fathers, and the one thing that is picked up is, fathers, do not exasperate your children. And we asked, well, why of all the things that fathers are not to do, is that one picked up? And it was because of the authority that a father has over the child. And the father's temptation will be to misuse his authority, and the child's temptation is not to accept the parent's authority. And so the one thing that's picked up is, fathers, don't exasperate your children. Here, I think there's a similar thing going on. Masters, do not threaten them. Because what is your average master-slave relationship going to be like? So often it was a confrontational one. Masters had near absolute power over their slaves. Slaves easily resented their masters. Slaves didn't want to work and often had to be threatened or were threatened. And so the relationship between master and slave was one of confrontation. Nothing like a partnership. And Paul says to these Christian masters, you've got to take the first step to improve that relationship. Do not threaten, since you know that there is, that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven. Those Christian masters need to find a better way of relating to their slaves. They're to stop threatening them, and they're to find a better way. And they had the responsibility to improve that relationship between them and their slaves. And I think there's a principle here for all of us. Because all too often, relationships are not good that we have with people. Whether it's husband to wife, whether it's parent to child, whether it's employer to employee. In all our relationships, we're to have good relationships as far as it depends on us. But it's the one who has the authority who needs to take responsibility for that relationship. Just as in the marriage, ultimately the husband has responsibility for that marriage. If things are not working well, he must address it at a time and in a way that is going to be most winsome. In a parent-child relationship within the home, if the relationship between child and parent is breaking down or is not good, ultimately the father has responsibility to seek to improve that. And so here, with masters and slaves, do not threaten them. Masters, it's your responsibility to improve the working relationship you have with your slaves. And so here's another challenge for us. Are there bad relationships in your household, in your place of work? If you have any authority, make sure you are using that to improve those relationships. And then the third point, don't show favoritism. How easy it is to treat people unfairly, to be lenient towards one, to be harsh towards another. And Paul, in writing to these masters, he draws their attention to their master in heaven, the one who is the righteous judge, the one who rewards according to what we do, the one who knows all things, who understands all people. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. Masters are to be fair. Any parent with more than one child knows that the one thing children do not like is that one child is favored. It's not fair. Well, slaves in a household are going to feel exactly the same. There's got to be an even-handedness. Don't show favoritism. God is fair. Now, as we come to the end of this section in Ephesians, the long section, we took a break halfway through. By the end of chapter 5, we took a break and went into Luke. But let's just pause for a moment as we think back over this big section from Ephesians 5, verse 21 to chapter 6, verse 9 here. And I want you to notice the place that love has throughout. Husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church. And I want you to notice the place of reward. There is long life for children who honor their parents. We saw that is more talking to a community where generally children are obedient to their parents. That community as a whole will be blessed, but that's the reward. And here there are rewards for slaves who serve as to God. The Lord will reward each one, whatever they do, whether they are slave or free. This is gospel living. This is living under grace. You see, the non-Christian might try to obey God's commands, might try to improve their relationships, might try to work better and be better at work and at home. But the non-Christian, they might try to obey God's commands more out of fear of punishment. You as a Christian have a far greater motive. Yes, we are to fear God. But love is a greater motive. You love God. You love his commands. You submit to one another in the fear of Christ, but not in the fear of punishment. You want to reflect his love, to honor him, and to be rewarded by him. Your fear is of losing his smile. And that's a different fear to the craven fear of the one who fears hell. And that new way of relating, where it's wanting to please Christ, that is what's transformative. And that now becomes the way you relate to other people. You're not driving them by fear, but you're drawing them by love. I have to say this. It does not come naturally for us. The natural sinful tendency is to try and control people. It's to try and force people to do what you want them to do, even manipulate them. And we all have our different ways of trying to do that. And when you look at these verses, these household relationships, you see a different way, the way of love, the way of grace. And the fact that Paul has to give so much time and attention to instructing Christians, that in itself tells us this does not come naturally. It can take a lifetime of learning. And believe you me, I feel so much that I'm still learning. Learning how to be a proper husband, a proper father. I don't have any employees, but if I did. And I want us to be encouraged by this. Because sometimes we can feel downcast when we get it wrong, when our relationships are not what they should be. And instead of being downcast by that, be encouraged by this instruction, that there is a better way of relating, be it with our children, be it in our marriages, be it in our places of work. We may not get it right for a long time, but don't give up. There is a better way of relating, and it's the way of the gospel, the way of love. And so as we finish this section, I just want to encourage you that you know, maybe your relationships in the home, in work, maybe they're not what they should be. Don't give up. Don't give up on anyone, be it with parents, with children, with employees, employers. God's grace is able to transform us. Let's pray.